Welcome home to another episode of the All Things COVID podcast. I'm Devin.
I'm Alex.
I'm Jan.
And I'm Holly.
Well, we are all back together to talk My Brother's Blood Machine. And the last time we were all together, we talked issue one. And now the series has concluded and we are here to talk issue six. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It felt so long, like waiting each month for the new issue to come out. And, the, you know, just like the suspense every month. It felt so long. And then when you go back, you're like, it's over? No, not anymore.
Yeah, for sure. I kept waiting to be like, for every issue, I was like highly anticipating it. Like, what's going to be in it? I need to know what's going to be in it. So yeah, it definitely felt like super long, even though it wasn't really that long.
No, six issues. It went by fast. We can talk about that a little more when we cover our overall thoughts, the length of the series. But, you know, Comic-Con is here at this point. So we're going to just talk about some merch because New York Comic Con has some exclusives. There is a prayer candle limited to 100, a black tarot card hoodie, a McLeod Motors shirt, and then for issue six itself, there's the Evil Inc. variant by Guylain Nemeth with the Tower tarot card, the Revolver variant by Lucio Servil Santos, limited to 500, and then the Jetpack variant by Vero Stewart, limited to 275, and of course, as always with those variants, you can get it signed or unsigned. Now that all six issues have been released, there is the trade paperback. There is a Jetpack Comics variant of that trade paperback, also signed or unsigned by Vero Stewart. There's the standard trade paperback with a bundle from Evil Inc. Comics, which includes a signed print of that Evil Inc. cover for issue six. And then there is a New York City Comic-Con trade paperback limited to 120. Oh my gosh, so much merch. Ah.
Can we talk about that Moses shirt, though? Like, I saw that and I was like, I am so sad I'm not here because that shirt is so dope. And I would 100% buy it just to have it in my closet.
I only need the hoodie. I need that tarot card hoodie so bad. Like, the candle is like, you want it because there's 100. You know, so it's like, well, I got to have one, right? But, like, that hoodie needs to be in my life, on my body.
That McLeod Motor shirt is sick. And it's Moses's shirt, so the cosplay you could do is pretty darn accurate with that.
And I mean, all of it's great merch. At that point, it's like, well, if you're going to the con, right, then it's like, well, which things, like, how bankrupt do I want to go, like, this weekend? But I don't know, it would be that candle and that hoodie for sure for me.
My answer is yes.
Yes to all.
Honestly, like, if Claudio decided to arrange some kind of like full tarot deck for My Brother's Blood Machine, I'd be all over that, like, in a heartbeat.
Oh, same.
All of them are just chef's kiss. They're just so good. Like, I love them all.
They really are. They're great.
There is that fan-made tarot deck that's circulating around there. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
I gotta save for the cruise. I gotta save for the cruise.
I actually have a couple of friends who did some of the designs in that tarot deck too. So, like, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Heck yeah. Well, eventually I'll pick it up, I think. But in the meantime, with just the amount of merch for issue six alone, we're cruising right along. So very quickly, we're just gonna recap issue six. I'm just gonna run through some of the main plot points. Long Arm kills Moses early. That's where we left off in issue five. They bust through the door. Cecilia escapes and take Moses' early's car. She meets up with Gunner Recall, and they end up covering the Bleem Brothers' dungeon in gasoline. Gunner gets caught, thrown into the machine, as Cecilia just barely escapes and blows the whole thing up, lighting the gasoline with her lighter. She gets home. She has this little tender moment with her mom, but she's worried about her brothers. She rushes upstairs, and they are gone, with the only thing remaining, a bloody handprint on the wall. So we end on a cliffhanger.
I am having such a hard time accepting that as, like, the end. Like, I read through it the first time. I flipped all the way back to the front page. I read it a second time thinking, like, a page got stuck together. I missed something. There's no way.
It doesn't help that it also, when it has the end, it has end question mark. Like, what? What?
Yeah.
You're just going to leave it like that? You can't do that to me. I need to know now. I need to know. And it's just, how will we know? I don't know.
Right. Like, I understand it being a 6-issue run. Everybody knew it was going to do well. I need the, like... that end, just like you said, Jay, and like that question mark, like, okay, but when are we going to know where it ties into my brother's blood machine, the blue energy and all that? And man, I don't know. She has like a revenge arc. Cause I don't think, like, she was obviously kind of having a mental breakdown in that last panel, but that was also like sheer rage and like she cracked. So I really want to see what's going to go on with that. And I also don't think that the Bleem brothers are done with. I don't believe that for a second.
No, I agree. And I think I was so like rereading, you know, throughout the series in issue 5, when they're talking about, you know, like Moses early kind of discovering the Bleem brothers when they were kids and all this stuff and how their mom kind of experimented on them and all this stuff. Seeing like what is obviously Long Arm's handprint next to the window and the boys are missing, you know, the missing McLeod boys. And then like thinking back to like issue 5, I'm like, oh shit, dude, there's going to be like more kid torture in the future here. Like, this is bad. This is so bad.
You know, just hearing you talk about issue 5 and you have the Bleem brothers' mother messing with the occult. What if it's not necessarily something that supernatural as opposed to contacting souls from the keywork? And that's what
yes,
brothers, that's why the blood machine has blue energy.
I still refuse to believe that my brother's blood machine is completely removed from the Coheed universe. I refuse to accept it. And exactly.
Oh, it's not. Oh, there's no way.
The blue energy and all this stuff coming out of the blood machine, you're like, it's all connected. It's all connected. It has to be.
Okay, so I had this theory before the comic came out that, you know, we get Wayne Andrew the Beekeeper as a song on the album. And it really, I mean, it's very clearly like him beyond the grave, right? He's died and he's like haunting his wife, right? Like, it's pretty explicit. Like, it's not, there's not really a question about it. But I actually had this theory that someone close to Cecilia, when we originally thought that Johnny perhaps was like still a character, that Johnny was going to die and go into the keywork, right? Into the energy and meet the other souls of the people that had died, including Wayne Andrews, the beekeeper, and realize like kind of what was going on with that encounter. And I am so disappointed that we did not get any of that kind of like explanation for it. Like, obviously we love Wayne Andrews. Like, as soon as we saw him back in like issue 1, 2, it was like,
one,
we love him.
One.
He's great.
It's seven panel story arc.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an entire page that I think all of us wept about on recording for
yes,
no, we did. Because you're like, he only gets the one. He got six panels. Well, really, he got seven. He was split in half, so it's technically seven.
And it's like we immediately loved him because we know his song. We know how tragic that character is, and it just feels like such a shame that his story ended that soon. So I definitely really do hope for. Maybe another 6 issues. I don't think that it has to go on and on and on the way that like the Emery Wars has, but I would be totally down for another 6 issues, like without a doubt.
I'm going to veer slightly off for a second. Cause when I heard, I'm a terrible fan, the what was the Prizefighter EP with the pink cover? Half Measures.
Half Measures. Yeah, that's right.
There are some songs on Half Measures that feel so rich in some sort of story. And I always was like, what's the connection to My Brother's Blood Machine? There's a connection here. There's a connection here. These songs, these lyrics, the way they're written, like there's got to be something. And you know, and like we talked on issue one, you know, there was that old bit that was supposed to tie the two universes together with Jesse saying, you know, well, before I tell you the story of the Amory Wars, I have to tell you the story of the Blood Machine. And it, for all these reasons, I'm still convinced it's connected. It's got to be.
We still have it in Keeping Secrets, the title track. Sincerely written from My Brother's Blood Machine to yours.
To yours.
Yes.
Yours. What, like, what is this? But to be fair, in terms of horror, this was like a slasher six issues through and through. It could have benefited from at least two more issues, in my opinion.
100%.
I felt the same, like the old like 80s slasher vibe is so strong. And especially, you know, like reading through them all again, it kind of feels like an old like slasher movie. It's like, okay, it's kind of like a lot of buildup in the beginning. And then like, oh, there's a little piece of terror here. And then, oh, little piece of terror there. And then the end is just so fast. The end of the series or the end of like, you know, these old slasher films is just death, destruction, and then cliffhanger. What is going to happen next, you know?
Plus, we waited so long for this story. Like, are we going to have to wait another decade before we get the conclusion to this arc? Is it just perpetually going to be a cliffhanger and we have to fill in the rest? I think that there should be some tie-in. However, we do reference that blue energy coming from the Blood Machine, but Claudio's colorblind, and he mentioned that he didn't even know that that was the color. So we could also be chasing ghosts here, which is what we often do in the Coheed community anyway. So.
Absolutely.
Okay, first of all, Devin, don't kill me like that with this decade talk, okay? I can't take it. My heart can't take it. I know I've only been in the fandom since like 2020, but like, don't do that to me, okay? But I also, yeah, I think that's hilarious about like Claudio being colorblind, because honestly, he probably like didn't have any real choice in the matter for that, right? Like the artist is usually the one that kind of makes those final decisions and details. And unless Claudio has like a little note that's like, oh, make sure that you include this, it's not going to happen. I mean, that's why we got Apollo as a Dalmatian in Second Stage, even though he was always supposed to be a Doberman. So, you know, it's like, I think that it's definitely true that that could very well, you know, and it would be fine if they ended up not connecting, but it would just make all of us so freaking happy for just a little crumb, just a little itty bitty crumb. I would be happy with that. You know, like you said, if it turns out that this occult that Amanda has her hand in is actually not a real like occult, it's not really Satan, it's like some Ryan Red Army bullshit, I would be down for that. Like that's fine. I'll take it.
Just tie it in somewhere. Wherever it ties in, I don't care. It's
fine. Show me the Red Army symbol. I'm good. That's it. That's so all
I'm
I
just,
need.
There we go.
I'm just saying, with Vaxis 2, we brought Cyrus back. We're talking about interdimensional travel, possible time travel. Anything's possible. Please just give us this thing. Just let us have this.
Yeah, no, and going back, Alex, when you were talking about, like, just the sheer terror and it seeming like a slasher movie, there are so many levels of terror in this comic, because you have the whole thing with her and the creepy stepdad, right? And then you have the complacency of, like, her mom, who pretty much admits, like, I should have paid more attention, right? Like I should have noticed more, I should have listened. It's that then you have the racism, you know, like the undertones of that. And then, you know, the occult. And then, you know, like the disfigured brothers who literally took out how many hundreds of people? Like within four pages? Like they just wiped everyone out. And something that I thought was interesting is that, you know, when the cops bust in and they see Moses on the ground, there's the hole going back to their tunnels and their den, right? Well, so Moses is there 1 second, and then when it pans back out, it could just be a continuity error, but all of a sudden he's not there. So they, I mean, maybe they didn't show in the panel, like, long arm, you know, being like, oh, hold on, let me drag him down here. You know, and then they go down to the whole, you know, encounter with Cecilia and Gunner, and they yank Gunner and throw him in the blood machine. And I'm just like, well, where's Moses? Like, you know, like, were they a little more attached to him and didn't want to throw him in there? Or were they like, screw it, we're gonna hurry up and get rid of this guy, you know?
That's an interesting thought. I hadn't really thought of it like that, with Moses's body not appearing in the next panel where it shows the cops next to the hole. It might just be a continuity error thing, but that is kind of an interesting thought to, you know, they recognized him for sure. You know, like, maybe they did some sort of minor soft spot where they're like, okay, we crushed his head. That's enough. We'll go away.
Right. I'm like, that dude used to, like, he's the reason you guys exist. He used to feed you in the bushes, you know, like, but let's, you know, like, it just, I don't know, man. Felt really bad about Moses. It hurt my feelings.
I know. I was expecting maybe, like, just a tender moment where they kind of let him go with Cecilia and just that progresses in its own way. But at the same time, it's like, perfect horror movie. The villain just blazes over and does their own thing. But I am confused on the timeline. When did they have time to break into Cecilia's house, kill the babysitter, and take the children and leave the handprint all... I mean, that could just be from them coming in or leaving, but I take it she destroyed them, or what we're led to believe that he destroys them, goes to the house immediately. So she had the first leg.
See, and I also feel like maybe that being said, because that's possible, but, you know, like, if the cops brought her home, but surely, you know, like, she had to ask, you know, answer their questions and everything, right? So maybe during their questioning, like, hey, you know, what happened here? And then they bring her home and everything in that time frame, because they have all their tunnels that seem to go through the whole town and outside in the woods. So they could have done it then. It's, and that's why we need a couple more issues. Like, I have so many things that I need answered.
So on my first read through of it, when we were talking about, you know, like, the timeline, like the question that Devin just brought up, I kind of assumed it was one of those, like, this has happened a while ago. So I kind of wonder if the Bleem brothers took the McLeod boys before they showed up to the Margaretville Jubilee, you know, and it was like, before we went on this big massacre rampage, like, we got you, you know, for whatever. Because, I mean, the assumption is that they are familiar with the town. They know the people in the town. They know that Arthur McLeod is this big, important guy. And, you know, what better way to strike fear than to show that, like, even the biggest dude in town isn't safe.
Right. I will say, with that being said, that, you know, the whole Jubilee slaughter happens and everything. But when she gets dropped at home by the police, her mom is there, and she immediately is like, where's the boys? So the mom's already like the slaughter thing has already happened. So, but it's a good point, you know, because she was like, where are the boys? And she's like, oh, well, the babysitter's up there with them. So did they have a sitter for the night, you know, and that's why the boys were there? Or were the boys forced to be at the Jubilee? Like, they wanted to force Cecilia to be there, right? To support.
So I wonder stepdad. A little bit. I see a little bit, right, in the panel with the bloody handprint going out the window, the sitter is there. And, like, we were talking about, like, the undertones of racism and things. The sitter is an obvious black woman. What is the likelihood that she's semi-servitude type thing? It's like, oh, well, this is our housemaid that lives with us. And the mother's already admitted that she has not paid attention, that she should have been paying attention. You know, how complacent is she really in her comfortable life? And she's like, what do you mean, where are the boys? Like, oh, they're with, you know, the nanny or whatever. I don't have to worry about them.
Possible.
So what I find really interesting is that at the start of issue 1, it's the day before the Jubilee. So I just had to Google it because I needed to know, given the song titles, when Easter in 1968 was, because we have not gotten an Easter issue yet. And I need to know these things. And so the issue one takes place the day before the Jubilee, and then the Jubilee Massacre is literally in issue four. So we have four issues all taking place within one day. And then literally the fallout of the massacre, the Jubilee Massacre, is essentially all of issue six, with issue five being just total backstory. And what I find really interesting about that is that that's a really short timeline to kind of condense a lot of information in. So I'm going back to, again, my fingers crossed, toes crossed, everything crossed for another six issues. Because I really do think that they have a lot more material that they can play with. Obviously, just the things that we've already discussed being some of it. But yeah, where's my Easter issue? Like Easter, by the way, just for clarity, was April 14th in 1968. So April 14th from March 15th is almost a whole month. What the heck happens in the month? Like, there's a lot here. And the Easter song itself is really like, really strange. It feels like it's a very disjointed series of images that don't really have a connection. And then the chorus is like, you know, I want to be with Cecilia, you know, like I'm going to go with Cecilia into the sun. It's like, what is this abstract like trip of a song? it's just so interesting. And I really do think that they have quite a lot to work with. And if the series ended on the Easter issue, I would be okay with that. That's all I wanted to say.
No, I was just going to say, because a lot of times you worry about there being filler issues, right? And I think Devin and Rob had actually talked about that on another episode. But I don't think that six more issues, there would be any filler. It's literally just telling more of the story, the lore, where it's going to tie into, you know, and everything else. And Adam Metcalf as an inker, he just did phenomenal. Like those blues, grays, and greens in that last issue, like just.
Adam Metcalf, most notably, has also colored for the Sons of Anarchy comic series. And did actually the coloring for Evil Inc.'s Translucent.
Okay, so that makes sense. I haven't read the first. I do have Translucent, though, so that makes sense. But, like, I don't know. It made me pay more attention to it because I was like, well, wait a minute. It's just all those blues and grays and those greens. And then the contrast, you know, in the next panel when they're inside the houses, it's that dingy, like we all talked about before, tobacco-stained walls and, you know, like, let me feel really dirty. And then all the occult scenes and everything in issue five, it's just, I don't know, he killed it, for lack of a better term. Everything about the series is great, so, except for it needs more issues. That's my only issue with it. So
I do agree, like, I want more, but again, like, going back to like that 80s slasher, like, it makes sense that it would all happen in a day. You know what I mean? Like, it makes me think of, like, Halloween and, like, all these other movies where it's, like, you know, it's just that old cheesy, like, one night. And blah, you know, and then it's, like, terror. And it's so good. It's so true to form, right, for what it was, you know, designed to be. Like, that it's spot on.
Yeah, and Claudio is a huge slasher fan anyway. So, you know, it makes sense. Cram as much carnage as you can into a 24-hour period. Why not? Or 48. I feel like this is more of a 36-hour window with this one, maybe. I don't know.
We need to know what time they woke up.
Yes.
with
continuity.
It's just like, whatever. But with My Blood Machine, oh, we know the exact second.
Yes. Yeah, you sure. Tell me there's a 10-year gap between Second Stage and Keeping Secrets. I'll believe you. I don't care what happened in between at all. He just sat on a trash planet for 10 years. That makes sense to me. And you can go on about
fine,
our day.
Fine, works out.
It's even worse for Star Wars. Luke is on Octo. Okay. But
and somehow Palpatine returns.
Somehow. Oh, they're doing some work in these series to make that work. But I did want to go back to what you said before about the mother just kind of being so blasé about her children. It makes so much sense that neglecting Cecilia dealing with Arthur, that she'd also neglect the brothers. Just whatever, you know, this horrible massacre occurs, and you don't think that after returning home, she would check up on the kids.
Right, like be clutching them, right? Like, I'm going to sit in here with you guys and the babysitter, right? Like, let me protect my family. She's just like, you know, like.
And that's the thing, too, is I wonder, right, because thinking back to the record and, you know, some of the lyrics, you know, if not for you, for the children, things like that. So it's very alluded to that maybe she is just as conditioned to the abuse and just like, okay, maybe her way of dealing was just to shut the fuck down and not deal with anything. And so, you know, I mean, it's there's a lot of complexity in the characters in this series for sure.
I wanted Gunnar to live so badly, especially like he like just wanted revenge for the one person that cared about him, and not even revenge, justice, it felt like. And for them to go together and kick ass, I mean, Cecilia being the final girl, it makes sense. I get it. But
Gunnar to be a final guy, too.
Yeah, come on.
I think it's so, it broke my heart some whenever he was telling Cecilia that, you know, he wanted revenge for Vic Fontana because he's the only guy who cared about him. And all Vic ever did was give him a jacket. And I was like, that me, like, how sad is that?
That's how low the bar was for him.
Yeah. Like, this dude gave me a jacket. That means he cared about me, and I want to avenge his death. It was a lot.
It does make Gunnar's character so much sadder.
Because
from the get-go, you know, everybody's, you know, assuming and accusing him of, you know, killing this person so brutally, and there's no evidence. They can't really hold him. But, you know, so everybody's kind of going to outcast him instead. Like, well, if we can't arrest you, we're going to shun you from society in right. the best way that we possibly can.
And they ostracized him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and even eyes when he was in the machine. Oh, my God.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. When she throws the lighter and you can see his eyes inside of it, I was like, oh, fuck. Like, that is rough right there. Like, what an ending for just a sad life, you know. But I don't know. I think that there's something to that in short run stories, and especially the way that these stories are written. There's something to a character that just doesn't get justice. There's, you know what I mean? There's something that, you know, it feels like Patrick. It feels like Patrick in Second Stage, where it's like there's really no justice for him. Like, this terrible thing happens to you, and then, oh, look, another terrible thing, and then, oh, look, a final terrible thing. Like, sorry.
Right. It's just so interesting to me that you brought up Patrick, because I was going to say that Gunnar has kind of become a little bit of, like, Claudio's self-insert character. Now, the reason I say that is because he uses Gunnar Recall as, like, his tag for, like, all of his gaming, right? So he obviously really loved that character, and he really felt really close to that character. And ironically, he felt that way about Patrick, too. And he got so upset when people hated on Patrick in the original SSTB run that he was like, no, 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 no. We got to make a special issue that's just going to be released in the Ultimate just for Patrick so that people can stop, like, being mean to Patrick, because I love Patrick and they can't be mean to my boy. And so it's, like, really funny how there are those parallels between those two characters. But, yeah, Gunnar definitely felt like such a great character and such a misunderstood, kind of the outcast, just really wanted somebody to, like, be his friend and, like, care about him. And Fontana met that for him and then was taken away. And it's like, I ain't got nothing left to lose, so I might as well, like, you know, go at it. And then in that final issue, like you said, when he was in the machine, it's like, damn, like, he had this opportunity to have a friendship with Cecilia, who would definitely have understood his pain, who would have definitely, like, been on his side. You know, well, obviously she was, like, in those final moments, but it's just like, and then it's all over.
It's such a, like,
I don't know. There's just something that's like kind of great about, you know, seeing like the setup for like, and now the loner gets his chance to be the hero. And it seems like so overplayed when it works out. And so to see it just like, eh, fuck you, dude. It's not happening. Like, that is such a big slap to the face. But, you know, I think biased a little bit, because I think I mentioned it when we did the number one issue. I was a fan of Prize Fighter when this record came out in 2006. Like, I waited for it, and I obsessed over it. And Run Gunna Recall Run, The Town Wants You Dead, was probably one of my favorite tracks. And so I think, like, the love that I have for that song, like, I wanted more for Gunner in the story. And so it's a little heartbreaking, but I get it. Like, I get it.
I mean, alternatively, like, you know, because, I mean, it was a heartbreaking panel, you know, because he gets, you know, I feel like he also knew he wasn't going to make it. That's why he was like, here, take the gun, go on up, right? Because he's trying to have a redemption arc, and he wants to make sure that the Bleem brothers, like, get it. And that's kind of why he stayed behind. So that being said, he was still conscious because his eyes were open and he had that look on his face. When she threw the lighter, it all lit up. So whether they're actually dead or not, as we all heard on this tour, there will be justice and murder. So it's this little redeeming character arc. Like, that literally went through my head when I read that. I was like, all right, okay, like, here we go. I mean, so even if they aren't actually dead, at least he did something, you know, like, and he knows that she got out. Maybe if we get more issues, I want to see Cecilia just go on a rampage. Like, I really do, because that girl's been through enough. Like,
yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, even if we don't get like the backfill of like, oh, here's all these other things that happened, whatever, like, you kind of want to know, like, well, what's going on with Cecilia? What is the future for her? Because so far, you know, most of her life is just bad, and then it ends really bad. But now she has like this opportunity where these things that were likely tying her down to the town and things like that, which was mostly her family, her boyfriend, they're all gone. All those things are gone. You know, it's her and, you know, her mom, who don't think that that's a great relationship, you know? So she's really just kind of on her own now to do whatever. And I don't know. You kind of want to know, like, is there a happy ending for Cecilia, or is just more bad stuff coming on the next anniversary of the Jubilee?
Yeah, it's going to be like a Camp Crystal Lake situation. Every time there's a Jubilee, something comes up from the... Yeah, no, nobody needs that.
I will say, though, going back to the idea of Patrick and Gunner being the same character, I kind of saw that with Sam in Vaxis 1. But at the end, Sam has that redemption and makes the big speech to the prisoners and gets everyone hyped to leave the Dark Sentencer. So with Gunner, I was kind of hoping they would do that same route and we'd actually get to see the payoff of it. But Holly, when you said that he helps Cecilia escape, like, that to me kind of is like, okay, that was his mission. That was his purpose. He allowed for the continuation of the story, essentially. So,
yeah.
Okay. I feel a little bit better about Gunner now after this conversation, I'll be honest.
Good. I'm glad that we can take a little bit of solace in something so terrible. Yeah, I don't know. It was a lot. Like, I've reread it like twice, you know, just because, like, the first time I wasn't mad, but I was like, okay, this should have been more than six issues. And I was like, you know, in my feelings a little bit about it. But yeah, no, the second read through, I was like, okay, you know, cause you notice a little more. Anytime you revisit something, you're going to notice a little bit more about it. But, Moses was a good dude. He deserved better than I can't say how the town felt about him. I know how McLeod felt about him. Right.
That was another bit that stood out to me, like on the second read through of it, was cause again, going back to the record, you know, the song, The Fight of Moses Early and Sir Arthur MacLeod, like, it sounds like it's, like, this really big, like, you know, kind of built-up thing. And it kind of felt underplayed in you know, issue one, and it was like, that was it. That was a big fight, huh? Okay. All right. Well, this stinks. But that being said,
if he worked there for 15 years, that's a lot of suppressed, you know, feelings and like being undermined and like having to feel like somebody's assuming you're stealing, you know, or doing something bad, you know, all the time. And you're just going in there doing your job to where this guy can sell cars and be like the figurehead of this terrible bullshit town. Because, man, what a bullshit town that one is.
It really did feel like a huge slap to the face for Moses, you know, the way that that all went down with Arthur. I expected more. And then especially, like, knowing the backstory of, like, you know, Arthur's abusing Cecilia and things like that, it was like, oh, Moses is going to get his moment, like, really, you know, just give the beans to Arthur. But we were talking about noticing things. You mentioned like noticing things a little more in depth, like the second time you go through them. I'm looking at it now, the panel when, you know, she chucks the lighter down into the cave and you see Gunner's eyes, and then you see, you know, everything on fire. All on fire. But you see, like, there's a Butchie is in there, you know, saying like the machine is dying, our chance is lost. And it really makes me wonder about the things that we don't see between the Bleem brothers and the machine. What is, you know, like, we get that, like, okay, they're chucking bodies into the machine, it's whirring and racketing and making all this noise, and then there's this blue light that comes out of it. Is there something else there? Like, they keep talking about, like, you know, early in earlier issues, talking about, you know, he will bless us and stuff like this.
Is divine. He is pleased. So about that, they're treating it like it's a sentient being. Because it's like, it's dying. It's dying. So, I mean, they're not the sharpest tools in the shed, obviously, you know, like, because they're not. But, you know, I mean, and the whole reason that they started kind of going in that direction is they had tunneled underneath the church because they were showing that in issue 5, right? And they're like, okay, well, these people are paying, you know, tithing and whatever offering to their God. So that's what the blood machine is to them.
So as far as they're concerned. What I'm alluding to with it is, and I'm purely getting this from like the blue light that we see come out of the machine. The first time that we saw the blood machine in use, it reminded me very, very much of the panel from In Keeping Secrets when they were throwing the stars into the reactor. Like, that's just what I thought. And so for me, and like I said, again, I love all things like crazy and conspiracy. It feels like, you know, what are the things that we don't see between the Bleem brothers and the machine? Like, are they actually communicating with some, you know, key entity? Are they, you know, is this all for the glory of something?
Okay, so do y'all remember those really silly promotional videos that came out for, Devin's shaking his head, for You're the Black Rainbow? Where a really silly looking Wilhelm Ryan suddenly appeared in all these random scenes in seemingly our world, only to kind of dash along the corridors or like slink out of sight after wreaking some kind of havoc. That is so what I was thinking of when I was reading the issues, because I was like, what if Wilhelm Ryan appeared to these brothers and was like, oh, you want to be, you know, powerful, you want to be accepted by the town, you want to, you know, rule over these people, whatever it is that they want. You want it, I can make it happen. All you have to do is feed this handy dandy little machine souls, and I will make it happen for you. I have no idea how this is possible. I can't say how they actually get
it. It's a multiverse at this point.
Why not? But it's like
everything else is.
Maybe that's a supreme tri-mage power that we just don't freaking know about. But like,
it could be.
That's what I think. So
Devin is plotting, and I love it. I love watching it.
What if Wilhelm Ryan loses, and this is his backup plan? this is how he's going to restart doing what he needs to do. And then calls him to return in Vaxis with Cyrus Amory now that we have some keywork energy introduced through Nine.
Somehow Wilhelm returned.
It's just Star Wars. It's just Star Wars. That's all it is.
I won't be mad at it.
It's a dark, weirder Star Wars. It's, you know, it's fine. Also, I'm sorry. I need to know where Jesse ties into this.
Jesse was cut as the narrator of the story because it just didn't ultimately fit in with the narrative he wanted to build in this series. And honestly,
yeah, I think I vaguely remember that now. Yeah, it's been a while.
I kind of think it was a good choice, to be honest, because as much as I love Jesse, like, Inferno is definitely up there. And if I had to rank characters, like, he would definitely be up there. But I do think that it would have kind of made it a little more convoluted. It kind of reminded me of the SSTB comics. Those are rough. I'm just going to come out and say it. They're really rough. And it's made rougher by Inferno narrating part of it and then it jumping perspective, but he somehow knows what's going on. And it's like, I need like one voice here. And they want it to be Jesse's, but it just, I don't understand how he knows the things he knows. And it was really confusing. So I do think that it was maybe a good idea to kind of nix that idea. But I definitely think there's room for him to come back. If he can come back in Mayo Deftonwolf, he can come back here.
I was going to say, I think Claudio's full of shit and Jesse needs to be a part of this universe.
That being said, like at some point, and it might not be Jesse, who knows who it might be, but it might be like, so blah, blah, blah. Back in 1968, this thing happened and that's what got, you know, set course for X thing that we have no idea really what happened. And I'll take that too. And maybe Cecilia's Jesse's like mom or grandma or something. Like that's just like who knows? Could not be.
Before we completely set up shop in Theory Town, what are your overall thoughts on the series and what was your favorite issue?
Okay. Well, Devin, you should go first because you asked the hard question.
Yeah, I was going to say, way to lay it on us.
All right, fine. I'll give you all some buffer time. Okay. I was on the edge of my seat, and it truly left me wanting more just because every issue was like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And especially with issue 5, which is my favorite issue, the amount of backstory we get, the lore inside of the lore was phenomenal. And then for it to end so, I dare I say, abruptly in issue 6, it was just like, oh, no. Because issue 5 was so good that I think that the storytelling there was way more powerful than some of the earlier issues where it was just like slaughter. But I really liked it, and I wish that it had just 2 more issues to really fill everything out so that even if they did end on a cliffhanger, it would be one of those cliffhangers where it's like, okay, I'll let it rock. Like Friday the 13th, where you have Jason coming up at the end. It's like, oh my gosh, that's a crazy cliffhanger, but pretty much all the other plot lines have been tied up at this point. I feel like I ended with more questions than I did answers, and I don't know if I love that or if I hate it, and maybe that was the point.
It's a half and half.
So I think overall, like it was fun. It was a fun series. I had a great time with it. It was kind of cool to have, like, you know, like we've theorized these small elements of something connected to, you know, this other larger thing. Honestly, I think there were a couple of times, I'm about to blaspheme, I felt a little underwhelmed. I was kind of like, all right. But I know I agree with you, Devin. I think 2 more issues would have given us everything that we wanted out of it, just to tie up everything. And like the comment I made earlier, it feels like the fun part of it is it feels like an old slasher film because there's kind of like this slow buildup, welcome to all the characters down. And then at the end, it's just like, death, death, death. It's very fast, and then it's done. You know. So I mean, it was really good. I think the little tidbits is one of the things that I enjoyed more in issue 5, when they're looking at, you know, their house as children, and you see the tarot cards that the mom has on the wall. I love that those were the tarot cards that came with the record. You know what I mean? Like, you see them all upside down, you're like, I recognize that. Like, I know where that's from. That was really cool. It was fun little things like that. Definitely the art and the direction from issue 1 was not what I expected the series to be at all. Not even close to what I had assumed that it would be about for, you know, the past 16 years or whatever waiting for it. But it was so much fun, and I could definitely get behind more like little one-off ideas like this.
I actually think my favorite issue is issue 1. And the reason for that is because, I mean, issue 5 is fantastic. Without a doubt, it has so much going for it. Both of you have already brought up so many great points about why issue 5 is so powerful and so interesting. But I actually really like issue 1 because it really gives us, it really paints a really great picture. It sets you up just right. You know, I think back about our first conversation when we were all together talking about issue 1 and all of the little nuances that it had pointed out and how it really set the stage for what to expect going forward. Wayne Andrews was in it, which I've already mentioned. I love him so much. The fight with Moses Early, you know, and Sir Arthur MacLeod was kind of hinted at there. We get the hints at like what's going on with Cecilia and her family. We get the surprise that Johnny is no longer Johnny. I mean, it was so interesting to see how the world had changed in my mind and how it was setting us up for the rest of the series. And I could easily reread that issue many, many times over and still be like, ah, so cool. So I think issue 1 is my favorite. The series is fantastic. Yes, there are, I do think, like Alex said, there are a little bit of underwhelming parts too. And I think that that's just unfortunately what comes when you're trying to tell a tale in such a quick succession. You need to have exposition, which is not unfortunately as fun or as interesting sometimes as like the actual plot can be. And so I do think that like issue 2 was kind of like that, right? They're like walking through the woods for like half the issue. It's, you know, it's like, yeah, I totally get where you're coming from. And that was fine, you know, but just fine. I think that the only shortcoming, the art is fantastic. The tie-ins are fantastic. The ending has everybody driving themselves crazy, which I'm one of those people, definitely crazy now. But I think the only shortcoming is the length. I definitely could use some more issues. And, you know, I'm an advocate for 6 because I definitely would like to see them go all out and like really flesh out a lot of these other plot lines and maybe even flash back to some of the other things that we've seen but kind of missed. You know, if they, like I said, you know, I live in Theory Town all the time. So if they happen to go back to the death of Wayne Andrews and kind of show that he is in fact in some kind of keywork limbo, I'd be all for that. Yeah. So like, I that's it. That's the only thing that I'm going to complain about is the length. When I saw end with a question mark, I was like, I wanted to flip all of the tables in my house and, you know, yell and scream and shout like, what the hell? This is unfair. I want more. So immediately I was like, I want more. I'm on board for more. So that's it. That's all I care about. Give me more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. No, the first time when I was done reading all of them, I was mad because I was like, this is it. Like, when's the rest of this going to come out? But objectively, I mean, even, you know, on my second read through, it's a great story. The art's great. It has two of my favorite writers, which Steve Niles and, you know, I didn't know Claudio Sanchez is going to be one of my favorite writers until the Amory Wars start being a thing. And then you have Andrew Ritchie's art and then the inking and just everything. And we had talked about it on the first episode that we did for it. The blood splatters in the panels that kind of creep out, you know, like they definitely showed up again and again. But no, like the only real issue I have is just like, I just want a little bit more, which just means it was a good series, right? Like, but also please give us more issues to where we can wrap that all up. As far as my favorite issue, it's a hard decision because my knee-jerk reaction is to say issue 5, but also issue 3, because you get more of that lore of when they were underground, you know, and figure out the whole church situation and like, oh, this is how we can get to our divine purpose pretty much. But I also feel like I'm going to go with issue 5, but I have flipped back through issues 3 and 5 more than I have the other ones. But yeah, so Claudio Sanchez, please give us a few more issues. Like, that would be phenomenal. We would love that. But yeah, no, it's good. I'm sad that it's over, but I'm also excited to see where it's going to tie in at, or if we're going to get more issues or whatever, you know? So I'm here for it.
I wonder if we have to buy those prayer candles in order to get more issues. If that's the case, I'll buy one.
I don't think you're going to have to worry because what did Devin say? There's 100 of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's 100. If that's the answer to this, then we're good. We're golden. Anybody going to the con, please pass that along, that this is our offering to him to please give us more.
Well, if you did not have a chance to go to New York Comic Con or the SS Neverender or Tor or anything where there was Coheed merch available, we have some for you because Andrew Burford donated a full set of the Revolver variants for us to give away. So thank you, Andrew, first off.
Sweet.
Huge thank you to Andrew. Yeah, keep an eye on our socials to learn how to win a complete set of the sold-out Revolver variants. I believe there are still some available, but not the full set. So this is the last place you can get them all together. And guys, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. This was so much fun. I can't believe it's over.
I know. It was a good time the first time. It was a great time this time.
I'm crossing everything that it's not actually over, and we will be back in like – half a year tops. I'm not gonna hold out for another decade. Devin,
it's coming. It's gonna happen, Jan. I believe in us. I believe that this is gonna happen.
Everything is crossed.
We're gonna will it into existence. Everybody buy the prayer candles though, seriously.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share? Anything you may have coming up? Anything you'd like to promote?
It's been plugged a lot recently. I'm gonna do it again. Drumset Confessional. It is the dopest of dope. It's so cool. Like, honestly, the knowledge that, like, what you're donating to is going to, like, actually help people is phenomenal. And honestly, I've had a blast. I've had so much fun on Patreon interacting with Rob, watching the videos that get posted, you know, what Josh is up to, the little behind-the-scenes stuff. Interacting with the core team, interacting with the other Patreons, it is the coolest. And honestly, like the stuff that they have for the different tiers on Patreon, it is a steal. It is such a good deal. Like if you're just looking to like get some neat stuff that you're not going to find anywhere else, like if that's the sole reason you do it, fine. We're still going to take your money and you're like, go put it to something good. You know what I mean? Like, sure. Outside of that, this time in 2 weeks, we will be getting back on a boat from Puerto Plata. We'll all be, you know, well, not all. I'll be heavily buzzed from day drinking, suntanned, sunburnt, having a great time, getting ready to go see another, you know, outdoor Coheed deck show.
Have a drink for me. I'm not going to this one, but have a drink
you.
For me.
I got you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, yeah, if you are interested in learning more about the Coheed mythos and you want to, you know, learn all about how the songs connect to the story, the Gonsgrad is where it's at. And actually, recently, I've had a couple of people come and help out and just, you know, at least do some editing, which is great. I'm only one person. I'm human. I make mistakes and I can't do everything myself. Yeah, it's just my little baby project. I've been super duper busy recently, but I do have a couple of pages on my little list to edit and flesh out. So, you know, if you are super knowledgeable and you want to learn more or want to help, go ahead and edit it. It's fandom. It's wiki fandom, so it's totally open to the public. Feel free. If I don't like your edit, I'll just revise it or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm pretty open to suggestions and changes, though. So, like, have fun. But, yeah, just, you know, I'll plug that. Gonsgard Wiki. Check that out.
In real life, writing writer.
There you go.
Oh.
Okay.
I was going to say, I can attest to how good the Gonsgard Wiki is because, what was it? They made a... Sixman made a post looking for like people who wanted to cosplay as like a narrow on the ship. Mm. I've never cosplayed in my life. First thing that they would say, sign me up. That the email didn't say. I immediately jumped to Gonsgard Wiki and was like, all right, we need to read this whole page about the narrows real quick.
All right. Oh my god, I'm so glad. I'm genuinely so glad. Whenever anybody like actually checks it out and like gets some use out of it, it just makes me so happy that all of the hours, literal hours, days, months that I've poured into it have, like, you know, actually been useful to somebody. So, like, I'm so glad.
Just know that if I get picked for that, all the knowledge that I have for the con is coming from your page.
Yay! Well, I cite my sources, so it's, like, legit. I swear there's nothing, like, fanciful on there. Like,
no, I've sent a couple of people to it, and they're like, thank you, because I, like, it's one thing for me to try to explain it, but, like, it's... If it's all laid out the way that you have it laid out, it's so much,
yeah,
so much easier.
I try.
I can't hear it because I go off on tangents all the time because my brain jumps everywhere. So, yeah.
Like the story pages are in chronological order from like what actually happens in the events of the story. But if you jump to like, if you're confused about a character, right? Like if you go to Jesse's page, then it'll show you his character history in chronological order. So it will tell you what happens like first and then, you know, all the way through properly, which was such a mind fuck to edit and figure out. And I had over the pages. So yeah, like if you're really curious about anything of the story, like check that out. It's helpful. Look, these people attest it's helpful. So yeah.
It is. We promise. It's not a trap. It's good. It's great stuff. Yeah, I don't really have a plug. My boyfriend and I, we've been going to not SDCC or NYCC, but we did the Memphis Con a couple weekends ago, selling toys and comics and stuff, and saw a lot of rad cosplays. Nothing Amory Wars related, unfortunately. Memphis, please, if you hear this, y'all can do it. I know you can. But no, it was a really good con. It was a good time. But I'm ready for the next tour since I'm not going on this cruise. So hopefully... we'll get a tour in the next year. Devin probably already knows about that, but cannot divulge anything. But here's hoping.
Sworn to secrecy. Yeah, fan away.
Well, on that note, this has been another episode of the All Things Coheed podcast. Thank you guys so much for joining the conclusion of My Brother's Blood Machine.
Or to be continued.
It hurts to say conclusion.
For now.
It hurts to say conclusion.
For now?
...
Yeah. ... question.
Well, I'm Devin.
I'm Alex.
I'm Jan.
And I'm Holly.
And thank you for listening. Really quickly, can y'all like put on like your best surprise face so I can take a picture with the comics for a promo?
Oh god, hold on. Wait, oh my god. Okay, no, that works.
Oh, no.
I thought I'd like moved out of frame.
Yeah.
You look great. It's fine.
Thank you. I don't ever do video chat, so I'm just like, oh god.
I'm gonna apologize for all the low hits on that post with my ugly mug in it.
Oh man, come on.
To promote the episode, it's gonna be great. But
you muted yourself.
Thank you so much.
Right on.
With the tower. I knew I was going to mess it up when I wrote it.